Well, it does seem like a long shot, but Donald Trump said this week that he will ask the U.S. Supreme Court to rehear a case challenging his executive order curtailing birthright citizenship. The Supreme Court last month rejected this attempt by the president to restrict birthright citizenship in the United States, ruling that his directive, his executive order, violated the language of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment. Is it possible that they rehear this case? Let's talk about it with Matthew Schneider, the former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan and now the leader of investigations and white-collar defense at Hahnemann Law. Matthew, it's great to have you back. It seems like a long shot here that the Supreme Court would rehear this. And how often would this, can we look back in history and say something like this has happened?
Good morning, Chris. You're right. It is a long shot, but it is possible. So there is a process for this, for getting a rehearing before the U.S. Supreme Court. There is a Supreme Court rule on this. It's Rule 44, and it says that if you want one of these rehearings, you've got to file it within a certain amount of time. It's actually 25 days after that judgment gets entered. You've got to file your request. And that can be changed in some different ways, but it looks like the Trump administration will do that. There are also those kind of procedural requirements as of any rehearing filing where you've got to pay the filing fee and serve the copies. But really interestingly, if you seek this, oral argument is not allowed. The justices just decide it only on the briefs. And then you've got to get a majority vote. That's 5-4. And President Trump, he lost this case either 6-3 or 5-4. But either way, it's not good for him. The odds are incredibly difficult for him to actually achieve this rehearing and get it granted.
What would President Trump's legal team have to show to convince the Supreme Court that it should take the extraordinary step of rehearing this case?
In many other courts, when you're trying to get a rehearing, you have to show things like palpable error or some incorrect thing that happened in the lower court. Here, the Supreme Court rule just says you file this petition and you have to state the grounds briefly and distinctly, and that's it. So there's no special magic that you have to show at the U.S. Supreme Court to get a rehearing. And I think the rule is written that way for a very good reason, because this hardly ever happens, and petitioners know that the Supreme Court decisions are final, and they didn't put a lot of descriptive language in there for what you have to show, because oftentimes people just don't even go along with that. They just don't even seek it.
So you mentioned that they wouldn't rehear oral arguments. They would go off the briefs that are on the file. Do they have the ability to add to those briefs, or is it literally just, let's try this again?
Only if they did grant the rehearing. If they did allow that, then there would be additional briefs, and then people could file amicus briefs, just like what we saw in the regular course of the action.
You know, the case also raises some broader questions, too, Matthew, about presidential authority. What limits does the Constitution place on a president that's, you know, trying to reinterpret constitutional rights through an executive order?
Well, this is one of those limitations. Some of these other cases that were decided in this batch, they were decided on just the laws of Congress, and that can be overruled. So the president can sign those laws into place and the executive power remains. In this case, it's a constitutional decision, so the president's power is much more limited. He's going to be fighting over an interpretation of the Constitution, which, as Chris alluded to, you know, how often does this even happen when you seek one of these petitions for rehearing? Well, the last time it was actually granted was in 1965, and the only time it has ever happened when it's actually been reversed was in 1957. So it happened once where a petition for rehearing was filed, and it was really kind of on a tangential issue. It wasn't so grand as rehearing the entire thing. So once in our country's history this has happened, it doesn't seem likely that it'll happen again.
Is it possible that based on some of the things that have happened in recent days, like, for example, there was that hospital that had a billboard outside of it that said, you know, if you want to come here and deliver naturally, it's X amount of dollars. If you need a C-section, it's X amount of dollars. Do those things change the perspective of justices in a case like this where there just was a ruling, they had just decided on it, but things have happened since then that they would consider?
That doesn't generally change any of the views of the justices, but it certainly does get the attention of Congress. And I think you will very likely see bills introduced in Congress, if they haven't already been done so, to limit birth tourism or to attack that in different ways with the criminal law. You can prosecute that now federally through statutes such as wire fraud, but there really could be a more direct federal prosecution angle for those types of things if the Congress wanted to pass it. And if they do, I'm certain that President Trump will sign it into law.
And just to prove your point correct, yesterday a freshman representative out of the House, out of Virginia, introduced the Birthright Citizenship Clarification Act to codify the executive order that the president signed into law. So to your point, yeah, Congress has already taken that action.
Sure, and if he wants to have the president's order codified in the law, he might have that same problem with the U.S. Supreme Court because it's a constitutional issue. Mm-hmm. But if he wants to change other parts of the law, such as birth tourism, there's an open avenue to do that, and I think that would probably be upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court.
And if the Supreme Court declines to rehear the case, which history suggests is probably likely, is that essentially the end of the legal road? Is it done?
Yep. Yep, it is. That's the short answer. Yes.
Yes. It's the highest court. Yes. Interesting stuff, as always. Great insight, Matthew Schneider. We appreciate you. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, it doesn't surprise me that the president is asking for a rehearing. I mean, because if anybody was going to ask for a rehearing, it would be the president.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously was unhappy with the decision of the Supreme Court.
Sure.
But again, it was 6-3. So you would need two more to flip.
Right. But I also think he may think, well, you know, it's a majority conservative court. Maybe they'll, you know, rehear this for me because, you know, I put them there.
Mm. Meanwhile, some interesting work on the Greektown Neighborhood Partnership front. They opened the Gratiot Randolph Plaza this week. Certainly changing some of the areas down, yeah, in Greektown.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that coming up on the other side. But first at 7:44, time for Automotive Views with Mike Martinez. It's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org.
If you're a hungry Ford worker, you may want to stay away from their vending machines for a while. According to reports in Shifting Gears, a blog by journalist Phoebe Wall Howard, the automaker has fired two workers in two separate plants over allegations of snack stealing. Allegations those workers say are false. First, an electrician in Kentucky was accused of swiping a $2 cookie in May and was swiftly terminated. He produced evidence that he did indeed pay for the cookie, and Ford offered to rehire him, but he already found a better paying job closer to home. Now, a worker in Michigan told Howard he was also recently fired for allegedly stealing a bag of Doritos. He says he swiped his credit card, but the payment apparently timed out. Ford must guard against theft, but this seems no way to treat longtime workers that it claims are like family. The automaker should review its processes and third-party vending machine partnerships to ensure its workers' lives and livelihoods aren't suddenly upended over a technology glitch. For this week's Automotive View, I'm Mike Martinez with Automotive News.